I have to say, I believe that once again, it happens almost regularly, the country is engulfed in hysteria. That's what it is. It's just hysteria. It's affected Republicans. They watch television. They read newspapers. They see tweets. And they get sucked into the hysteria. That's what it is. It's very hard not to get sucked into hysteria. You can now understand why bad movements gain so many followers. If they can control media, as in the United States the left does, then you are fed a certain way of thought, and the more it is stated, the more screaming, the more people are affected. It is very hard not to join the general panic and hysteria. It's very hard. I may be personal for a moment. I have said on a number of occasions that the thing I fear most, I know my dear producer doesn't like when I talk about this, but the thing I fear most in a plane that would be going down is the panic, is the screaming. I have a visceral reaction against hysteria. You will note as well, by the way, that no matter what, that's the way the Democrats work it out, because if you have the press, you don't need anything else. Between the press and the media and the courts, you're pretty inviolable. So remember, Mitt Romney was caught in a private talk, speaking about the 47%, and never could live it down. It became a death statement. There is no Republican who could get away with it. There is no Republican for whom in the last few weeks of the campaign something will not be released. Mitt Romney leads a somewhat saintly life, so they couldn't find anything other than he might have bullied a gay kid in high school. That was actually reported. How many years earlier had he been in high school? 40 years? So it's very hard. It's extremely hard for a Republican to win. Women are just, according to reports, women are just incapable now in so many cases of voting for him. Funny, I'm married to a woman. I would say that on a scale of 1 to 10, she was not particularly bothered. I don't know what the number would be. As much as she doesn't want to, I might have her on. I might call her up. I have a woman's take on this. Your wife, has your wife lost sleep over this issue, as our friend says, Mr. Producer? No? Heather McDonald has written a very powerful piece on the sexualization of society and then the screams of horror and shock at such talk. I will read some of what she wrote. There's another dangerous element. In the year, let me get this out, folks, because it's amazing not that the Wall Street Journal published it, but how it would come to be relevant, so relevant, 17 years later. July 18th, 2000, I wrote a piece. I wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal when it came out in a book by Jerry Oppenheimer, that Hillary Clinton had called Paul Frey, the manager of her husband's failed 1974 congressional campaign, a Jew bastard. Actually, it was effing a Jew bastard. And I said, I wish to defend Mrs. Clinton. I do so as a practicing Jew and a Republican. And as one who believes Mr. Oppenheimer's claim that Mrs. Clinton uttered this anti-Semitic slur. By the way, there were others who heard it, and that was reported in The Guardian, I believe, in Britain at the time. I'll get to that later. I'd like to continue to read what I wrote in the Wall Street Journal 17 years ago. We must cease this moral idiocy of judging people by stray private comments. Is that relevant? As David McCullough's biography of Harry Truman revealed, one of the most courageous friends that American Jews and blacks had in the White House frequently used kike, and at that time you were allowed to actually spell it out, and the N-word in private. He even wrote them down. In a letter home from New York, Mr. Truman described the city as kike town. Was this unfortunate? Yes. Defining of the man? Absolutely not. Yet for decades, politicians and the media have gleefully deployed isolated remarks to besmirch the entire life of public figures. Take the reaction of liberals to the revelations on the White House tapes that President Nixon made anti-Jewish comments in the privacy of the Oval Office. These comments supposedly proved what an anti-Semite he was. What matters in assessing Nixon's decency toward Jews was that he appointed the first Jewish Secretary of State, and that the late Moshe Dayan, he was the defense minister of Israel, the most famous of them all, the man with the patch over his eye, credited the president with saving Israel during the Yom Kippur War. Mr. Nixon had nothing to gain politically from his actions. Jews vote Democrat. Was Mr. Nixon an anti-Semite? If by that we mean a person who bears ill will toward Jews and who, if given an opportunity, would harm the Jewish people, the answer is clearly no. To define anti-Semitism in a less rigorous way only cheapens the term. Unguarded private remarks do not constitute a personal philosophy. I wrote this in 2000 in the Wall Street Journal. That's why I am repulsed by the loose talk about Mrs. Clinton's long ago utterance. If that renders her an anti-Semite, then virtually every Gentile is anti-Semitic, and almost every Jew is an anti-Gentile bigot. But don't such remarks as Jew bastard, even if uttered in private, and even if uttered but once and in anger, tell us a great deal about a person's true feelings? No, they tell us little. Even if those words did reflect some negative feelings about a group, we still need to measure the speaker by two other criteria. How does she behave toward that group, and how does she publicly speak about them publicly? By either measure, no one can call Mrs. Clinton or Nixon an anti-Semite. It is highly misleading to probe private comments for evidence of anti-Semitism, racism, bigotry, and sexism. God, it's like prophetic stuff. The present trend emanates largely from a lethal combination, the totalitarian temptation inherent in contemporary liberalism and the media's sensationalism. It's bad. It's bad news. What he said is bad. Every one of you has said something bad. Your life can be ruined for no good reason. You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show.